And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 30th, 2020. Today, we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well and looking forward to talking about the climate impacts of transportation with you today, Ted, in the air and also rethinking the design of our very own Mass Pike with an eye toward climate. So without further ado,
so, Mariah, I have not been on an airplane in a while now, a couple of years probably, thank God. I've been on enough airplanes. The COVID pandemic shut down air travel to the point where many airlines almost went out of business or still are on the verge of going out of business. Many environmentalists cheered the clear skies from no airplanes and the general reduction in carbon dioxide pollution from air traffic, because it is such a big issue. But I just wanted to point out, as the teaser or the beginning of our conversation, the fact that as we slowly, the rest of the world slowly pulls out of the COVID pandemic, here in the United States, we're still stuck. But the rest of the world is thinking about how to get their airline industry back on track. And it turns out that Qantas, which is the Australian national carrier, has decided to offer joy flights. That is to say, to fly just for the joy of being up in the air, to fly out of Sydney, basically circle the Australian continent and go back to Sydney, 7-hour flight, just for the heck of it. I'm not sure exactly how to, maybe I'll leave it up to you to express your outrage. I mean, how exactly would you condemn that?
Well, I mean, it, you know, in the face of this article, right, that we, the Inside Climate News just talked about a study which shows that it's not, sure, carbon dioxide emissions from the aviation is bad, but there's actually more global warming produced by aviation than we originally thought, even, right? So it's worse than we thought it was.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the whole question of, is the airline industry going to come back? Is the airline industry going to come back post COVID? I saw a statistic, which I cannot capture and put in the links because I don't know where it was, but it said that the rate of increase of the air travel, which is growing internationally, that in 2020, with all of the COVID decreases, we are essentially flying the same amount that we did in 2015. So yeah, air travel levels today are equivalent to 2015, and everyone thinks it's a big shutdown, right? And that just shows how fast the air travel industry is increasing and all of the carbon pollution associated with it. I mean, the other interesting fact about the airline industry, which it has in common with the transoceanic shipping industry, is that the emissions that come out of an airplane are not the responsibility of any single country, because they happen in international airspace, despite the fact that one country or another may be the home base for an airline. The Paris Agreement does not require countries to regulate emissions from airplanes, and that's a problem, right?
I mean, too bad. It might sort of curtail Qantas' desire to just have some joy rides that pump all this pollution into the air.
So there's an article. There's a new report that's popped up recently that basically tries to do a scientific analysis of just how bad is the pollution from high altitude, these big jets that you see up in the sky, right? So we're not going to pretend that we're going through the science in too much detail. But Mariah, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the argument goes that your intuition that says big jet engine is putting out lots and lots of CO2, that's true as far as it goes, but it turns out the impact, the climatic impact, or the destruction of the environment, is actually that CO2 emission in and of itself is only 30% of the total damage that's being done. Is that reason roughly true?
Right. Yeah, there's also the nitrogen oxides and water vapor and soot that act as greenhouse gases. And I think, so for a while, I think that it was sort of unclear with the nitrogen oxides, and we can talk more about those in a minute, but it was unclear whether the nitrogen oxides were damaging. There was some thought that they were actually sort of canceling some of the effects of methane, which is a more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide is. And so the airlines were kind of saying, well, sure, we emit carbon dioxide and we agree that that's a problem. But, we don't know that all the rest, that the nitrogen oxides and all those other things are actually that bad, because, you know, it eliminates methane. But it turns out that in addition, the nitrogen oxides create ozone, which is certainly a greenhouse gas. And so this recent study shows that actually nitrogen oxide is a significant problem, and it erases the airline's ability to say, but, you know, right, we're not really sure if nitrogen oxide is a problem, so we can't really, you know, take that into consideration. Well, now they know it's definitely a problem.
I think it's fascinating. I just wanted to call it out. The statement that the nitrogen oxide, which is sometimes called NOx, because it's an N, an O, and a little X, right? That's the symbol for the nitrous oxides, that evidently they break up methane, which is a really intense greenhouse gas. I hadn't realized it. It just gives you an idea that the methane that comes out of the, you know, out of a flare in the Permian Basin goes up over the North Pole. And when some jet coming from Beijing comes by and drops off of the nitrous oxide, the nitrous oxide kills some of the methane. It just shows how interconnected everything is. And that we don't understand the chemistry
just to add a finer point to that, it kind of illustrates some of the complexity of this climate science. And so when you hear climate scientists saying, you know, 97% of the climate scientists say that greenhouse gas emissions are certain and they're causing problems, if they're making those kinds of bold statements within all of this complexity, you know that they're pretty certain about that stuff, right? Because there's a lot of things that they're uncertain about that they're not making such bold statements. So,
yeah. Well, and I think that one of the interesting, so the gist of the article says that the emissions that come from a jet engine are quite complex, and the interaction of those emissions with the atmosphere is very complex. And so they've tried to quantify all these things, and it's been years of round and round discussion. But they feel that with this report, they have more solid footing to make claims that the pollution from the jet engine is bad. And one of the things that they talk about, again, Mariah, correct me if I say anything like egregiously wrong, but these things called the contrails, the condensation trail, which is that white cloud you see at the end of a jet. It's zooming across the sky way, way up. And what is that condensation trail? What it means is that the little water vapor and some of the soot coming out of the engine, if that is pumped into freezing cold air, so if the jet goes through a really cold patch, then all of a sudden that water vapor gloms onto the soot and essentially makes a cloud, right? And so you have this condensation trail that follows the jet. Well, it turns out that those are essentially clouds, and that they hang around for many hours, and that during the day they can reflect some sunlight back into space, so they have a sort of a cooling effect. But at night, they trap the infrared radiation that's coming up from the ground and reflect it back down. So they have a warming effect. And when you net all that stuff out, the contrails are a big impact, a big contributor to the negative global warming impact of these jets. And it's really, really somewhat sobering, right?
Yeah.
So I think that the jets are flying around. The industry is trying to come back. There's a lot of jobs in it. It is unconstrained by treaty. It's quite damaging environmentally, and it's growing fast. So it's a problem that, dear listener, you should keep your eyes open for articles and information about it, because it's a problem and we're going to have to come to terms with it, right?
And I think, you know, we talked about there could be some solutions, right? Knowing this, of course, knowledge is power in a lot of ways, right? So there could be some ways that the airline industry could modify their behaviors so that they're not, you know, creating these contrails or releasing as much nitrogen oxide. So there's some hope in reducing some of the greenhouse gas emissions and the impact that they're having. Of course, you know, with the right technology and the right demand driving them in that direction. But as the amazing, fabulous Greta Thunberg, Swedish activist, would say, the best plane flight is the one that never leaves the ground if you're trying to mitigate climate impact. And so something to think about.
There you go. So we're on a bit of a transportation theme, so we'll switch over to transportation here in Boston. So let's switch from airplanes to automobiles. And again, we're still working out our post-COVID reality, right? We're recovering from the pandemic. Two articles recently in Commonwealth Magazine, one by Lawrence DeCara, Larry DeCara, and the other by Jim Aloisi, who's former transportation secretary under, I think, Deval Patrick. Basically, the two articles taken together make the case that Massachusetts needs to have a bold vision for transportation in the future, and that coming out of our COVID pandemic, we need to think differently about how people are going to get around. And the common complaint of these articles is that the transportation planners in the current government, the Baker administration, are basically auto-centric. That is to say, all of their thinking on transportation revolves around preserving the role of the automobile and getting people from point A to point B. And I think both our authors argue that that might have been fine in the 1960s, you know, in the go-go 60s, when everyone could go get your Corvette and, you know, drive to the suburbs. And we had building new highways, parking lots, all that kind of stuff. But that may not be, that automobile kind of culture may not be appropriate for the next 50 years. And all much of this comes down to a case in point, to a proposal to rebuild the Massachusetts Turnpike. Samurai, I know that you are very, very fond, for good reasons, of Boston University. It turns out that Boston University is right on the banks of the Charles River, which is one of the things that makes it beautiful, right? But between BU and the Charles River in the Allston section comes the Massachusetts Turnpike, Soldiers Field Road, and the MBTA Worcester line of mass transit. And they all come together in a portion of the Boston neighborhood that basically is like a couple hundred feet wide. And so the geometry of the available space is such that it's almost impossible to maintain things the way they are now when there's a desire to rework the Mass Pike that was built in the 1960s. It needs to be rebuilt. It's getting old. And the question is how to do that. And I don't know, Mariah, there's several proposals. I mean, you quickly go into a discussion about at grade proposals, which means building all the highways on the ground and not having any overpasses, or putting one or the other up in the air, or somehow cutting off the Charles River while they do the construction for 10 years, or blocking the MBTA. It's a real Gordian knot of issues. But I think I think the case that the authors are making is that we need to be visionary, that we need to not necessarily say that everyone's going to be driving a car in the year 2070, that there might be other ways of getting around, and to build that section of the Mass Pike more thoughfully. And that, you know, that ring any bells for you, Mariah?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think in the article by Lawrence DeCara, he sort of talks about don't rebuild this corridor the easy way. Of course you could, right? It'll be faster, et cetera, et cetera. But then you end up with a product that doesn't work for many, many generations, and you have to rebuild it again far too soon. So if you're going to do it right and do it thoughtfully and do it for the 21st century, and don't shy away from something just because it seems hard or even impossible. And I think that's, as we move towards this sort of, clean energy economy, this sort of more 21st century upgrades and innovative new world that we have to re-envision, we can't shy away from things that are hard. We have to take the time to really study what do we want this world to look like, and then spend the time innovating and making that happen.
Yeah. I mean, the Jim Aloisi in his article doesn't reserve his complaints to the state of Massachusetts. He also talks about the city of Boston, which has put, with a lot of fanfare, put a bike lane in on Dorchester Avenue near a train station. But he says it's a bait and switch, because what they did was they put in a bike lane, they took out a bunch of shrubbery and preserved the parking places for the cars, which is just, doesn't make sense. I mean, it keeps the automobile at the center of the whole thing, and now at the center of our transportation. And instead of making the street more livable by leaving a little bit of green, living green there, they took all that out. So now you have a more harsh environment, but you've got places to park cars. And I think
that's worth noting an episode we talked about a while ago about the importance of having green space for keeping the environment cooler, right? And causing less climate stress for the people who live there. If you take out all the trees and all the shrubbery, it can end up making a sort of hotter area. I mean, sometimes it can be as much as 15 degrees hotter in the areas that don't have any green cover. So that's a really critical piece of city planning, is thinking about the effect of the greenery and the heat.
And I think that feeds into that episode that we talked about sometime in late August. We talked about there was a proposal to cut down a bunch of trees on Melnea Cass Boulevard in Boston. And it turns out that because of grassroots action and because of the response and the recognition of the kinds of things, the environmental justice issues that you've mentioned, that the city has now backed off from chopping down those trees, and we'll do a full environmental review with the community, which I'm sure will be then a place where a discussion of the value of those trees can be had. That's a good thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there we go.
And that's all thanks to grassroots action, right?
All thanks to grassroots action. So we've flown all around Australia, right down to downtown Boston. We've been all over the lot today, Mariah. What we'll do is we'll put all those links into one place right on the internet that you can find. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog, where you can find the links to the things we talked about in this show. If you have an idea about how to rebuild the I-90 interchange near BU, please send it to us. We will forward it to the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. But you could also send us any other complaints or ideas you have to podcast@massclimateaction.net. That's podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can listen to us on your smartphone using any of the modern podcast distribution apps. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thanks for taking the ride today.
Always a fun ride.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.